Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more.
Salespeople, if you are not treating sales like a conversation, then you are, in spite of your best efforts, being sleazy. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting to an expert about how to ask for the sale without feeling sleazy. Donnie Bovine is a motivational speaker, author, podcast, businessman, and a coach that helps to change the game in mindset and success. His book, How to Be a Success Champion, Business Strategy for Badasses, is a story of his own life that has inspired thousands to get out of their own way and go for it. Donnie has launched his career from being a corporal in the U.S. Corps and spent over two decades mastering sales to becoming a founder and CEO of the Success Champions family of companies. Donnie Bovine, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Hey, Sarah. Thanks for having me. Well done. That was a damn good intro. I'm excited about this one. This should be fun.
Thank you. Me too. Let's dive right into it. Donnie, what do you see salespeople do right now that is sleazy?
They are trying so hard not to be a salesperson that they're doing everything in their power to end up being just like the person they don't want to be. So look, nobody in this world wants to be sold anything, but we all love to buy stuff, you know, and most people, because they're trying not to be that pushy salesperson, they're trying so hard they become across as that pushy salesperson. Because look, sales is literally just a conversation between two people. You know, it's just like you and I talking here. This is a sales interaction. The difference being is that conversation is going to have an outcome. I don't believe in closing, but I do believe in closure. So you get to the end of the conversation, you know, you get a yes, let's do business. You get a no, let's not do business. Or you get some sort of significant next step to move forward. And I think most people, because they're so wrapped up and they've got to get everybody to say yes, they've always got to be closing and all this stuff, that they end up doing all this nervous energy, greaseball tactics that make them come across like the exact person they don't want to be.
Mm-hmm. And once upon a time, that wasn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, maybe it's always been a bad thing, but at least it was what we were taught following a lot of those kind of traditional sales methodologies. That kind of schmoozy, smarmy sales thing was okay. What changed?
People, you know, I think as people were growing up, I mean, I don't know how old you are, Sarah, but I'm 44. So I grew up on some of these old school sales guys. And I know at the end of the day, as we were growing up in that style of, dude, I'm going to win every deal I sit across from type mentality, at some point you quit being human. And you quit, you know, giving a shit about the person you're talking to. And I think as a society as a whole, we actually started caring about the other individual. You know, for me personally, I want someone to walk away from that interaction feeling like they just had the greatest fucking conversation of their life. And I want them to feel like that they can take on the world. And if everybody were to approach sales from that perspective, then good things happen. But, you know, we did come from an era of always be closing, you know, use every strategy and technique. Do not let them out of your sight until that deal's done. And that created all these walls and barriers to where people would not open up. They wouldn't have these genuine conversations. They had so many objections. And then people tried to teach you how to overcome objections. And then it just became this game of nobody knew what the hell was going on. And at some point, some of us had to jump in and like, look, fucking stop all that stupid shit. Just go say hello. Right. And figure out who this person is. Why'd they get in their career? What are they trying to accomplish? Ask them how they want the conversation to go. Do they want to know all the company details? Do they, you know, want to just get to the nitty gritty? Do they want to dive right in? I mean, and take it to a real conversation. I think if most people would start thinking, how would somebody sell you your own products and services? Do that shit. Versus all this other schemey shit that you've learned over the years that just makes you look like a crook.
Something you said really, really resonated with me there. This idea that we started off with a methodology that was, you know, it had to be memorized, and then you're met with objections, and then you have to memorize rebuttals. And it's like you add layers and layers of complexity that are all just kind of learned by rote. And there's sort of no context that actually exists underneath them. It's like this, set of memorized tactics that individually are kind of worthless. And we make it so much harder on ourselves by just following those things instead of just having a normal conversation. Yet it's so difficult for salespeople to just have that conversation. And of course, coming from a background where they're taught not to. So what is the mindset shift that a salesperson needs to, you know, go through in order to adapt this?
Yeah, brilliant question. Disqualify everybody. And here's what I mean, is you're taught in traditional sales that I've got to go qualify this person, blah, blah, blah. You know, I want you to flip that entire mindset. I want you to disqualify everybody you sit across from and go in with the mindset that in a nurturing, loving way, they need to prove that they're ready to work with my company. And flip the script on how you're talking to them, because, you know, most people go into a conversation and they're convinced that their product and service, everybody fucking needs. Well, the truth of the matter, not everybody needs your product and service. If you've done business for any amount of time, you'll realize that really quick. There are clients you absolutely don't want to work with. We've all had those really shitty clients that are just a pain in the ass, right? So my thought process is, if I can go into that client to make sure that that client is not going to be a pain in the ass, they're going to pay their bills on time, they're going to have the money to pay me, I'm going to want to work with them, it shifts my entire mindset of how I should have that call. Because now you get to go in and discover things about them. You get to go in and be curious about them. And that curiosity is the greatest thing inside of sales, outside of asking questions, because now you've got to go find out and learn more. You know, how do they like working with vendors? How do they, you know, process things? How do they do this? And you get to go ask some amazing, great questions. And all the while in your head, you know, those things that are required for them to say yes. They've got to have money. They got to have the ability to say yes, you know, and they got to have a desire to put in a work for whatever you're doing. And if they can't meet that criteria, then you earn respect by saying, look, I just don't think you guys are ready to work with a client company like mine. And it's amazing when you have the power to control that outcome, because you're telling them they're not ready yet. You'll find yourself in more and more conversations where company like, hold on, let me tell you why I should be working with your company. And then they'll start coming to you, and it shifts the dynamic of me forcing my products and services on somebody to let them come to me so we can have these real fun conversations, and we remove the games. And you know the games are happening when all the objections and all that shit start popping up. It's because somewhere along the line, you lost a conversation and became that asset salesperson. Because now they're like, ooh, there's a disconnect. We're not vibing. So let me throw an objection at you, because that's how I know to get you out of my way.
Mm-hmm. Right? What is... No, go ahead.
No, that's it. So, go ahead.
Okay. What is the disqualification kind of... How does that look in practice? Is it something kind of a set of questions that people can build into their script or to playbook for this first call?
Yeah. So the first thing I would do is I would write down everything you need for somebody to say yes to your company. You know, so how much money do they need to have? How many employees, what all the characteristics are for somebody to say yes. And there's going to be a list of those. Then I would learn to what questions do I ask to uncover what those things particularly are. So let's say, you know, they've got to be able to spend $10,000 a month with you to do your product and service, right? Maybe it's coaching, whatever. If that's the case, and they've got to, that means they've got to have $10,000 liquid cash laying around that they can invest every month with you. I always start off every sales call with, you know, hey, Sarah, tell me a little bit about your world, your story. How'd you get here? Right. And what I'm doing is I'm genuinely interested in hearing their story, but I'm also looking for assumptions. So let's say you start telling your story, and I don't know your story, but let's say, you know, like, well, hey, we just got back from a Disney vacation, you know, spending time with the family. Two things happen in my head. Okay, we've got a little bit of a discretionary income that we can take the family to Disney. So we've got a little bit of funds. And then I'm going to explore that a little bit and see if it's was the bottom tier Disney trip? Was it a big tier Disney trip? And I'm actually just going and fishing for information. So I'm like, ooh, tell me what you did during Disney. Did you, what parks did you go to? Did you go mall? I mean, how long were you there? And if they say, well, we spent, you know, 40 days in Disney, I'm like, okay, this is a whole different level of person we're talking to, right? You know, so, but, and you can take that into anything, and they say, you know, well, I own a farm. Well, cool. Tell me about the farm. What's on there? And you go in and you start making assumptions. And, or they say, you know, if they go straight business, well, you know, I run a CPA accounting firm. Tell me about your accounting firm. Do you have other accountants working for you? You know, is this a multi-tier practice? And based off of that first move, you start making assumptions. Okay, he's got four other CPAs underneath me. That means he's a little bit bigger business. You know, he's got a few more people working for him. And now I'm going to dive into that a little bit further and understand, okay, are these people 1099s? Are they W-2s? How do they work for him? And I'm constantly going through in my head, I'm checking off all the boxes of what I know they need to have to be able to say yes to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. So you're building it into the natural conversation. It's just that you have a little bit of a direction behind the types of questions that you 100%. Are asking that person.
I look at it as like you're a private investigator, but that generally gives a shit about the person you're talking to. So if you're not into people, sales is going to be tough, right? You've got to be into people, and you really want to understand their world and where they're coming from. And when you pour into them, I mean, when you think about it, and you're coming from that perspective of I've got to understand their world enough to find out if they're a fit for me. And they've also got to walk away from this conversation feeling like this was the greatest thing that ever happened to them. Right now, I've really got to bring them value. So what can I tell them right now that's just rocks their world and brings them so much more? So I'm leaving them better than I found them. So even if we're not a fit, they're like, fuck, Donnie's conversation was amazing. And you start, they become a champion and telling other people, dude, you got to spend some time with Donnie. You got to spend some time with Sarah. You got to dive into their world. And now these people become your sales force because they're doing a lot of the heavy lifting for you out front by telling other people about you. Mm-hmm. But most people are so desperate for that sale because, oh my God, I got to pay my bills. Or, you know, if I don't get this done, that nervous energy carries right into the sales call. And even though they're trying to get it out of their head, they're not, you know, they're not diving in and pouring into these people. They're trying to figure out, how do I get this deal done? How do I get this deal done? And that's why they lose so many real conversations because nobody wants to be sold to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, let's go into some more of the tactics. We're talking overall about how to ask for the sale without being sleazy, but there are kind of multiple asks that a salesperson makes throughout that customer journey. The very first one being that initial first conversation, just the ask for the time. How can you apply the same kind of thinking of not being sleazy right off the bat? How do you open up that conversation unsleazily? Oh.
Yeah, for sure. I think you got to back up to where the conversation start. Was it on LinkedIn doing a reach out? Was it, you know, on the phone? Because those are the different plays. But both come from a space of connection. So back old school sales would say, find a picture in their office and ask them, are those your kids, right? You know, and that stupid stuff that doesn't work. But what does work online is similarities. So let's say you're on LinkedIn, and we'll start there. You know, you can go to somebody's LinkedIn profile and it'll tell you a lot of information, what schools they went to, where they've worked, you know, along the way. So oftentimes I'll just send a connection with no message, you know, and I'm just going to connect. So I just want to see if they're active on a profile. If they connect back, I have one move. It's really simple. It's Sarah, thanks for connecting. Tell me a little bit about your story. And then I don't say anything else. Where most people are mentally like, hey, I do XYZ products. You know, have you guys ever thought about health? Well, number one thing, ever thought about health insurance, Sarah? It's the number one thing you get on LinkedIn or financial advice, you know, right? So, but if you come in and go, hey, tell me a little bit about your story, and they come back and they respond to that, you're amazed by how quickly you can gather some information. And sometimes they go straight business. Well, we've been in business for 12 years. And, you know, we've had a lot of fun. This is where we're at. This is what we do. Sometimes they come back and they're like, well, I'm married. I got a couple of kids. You know, I went to this university and I found myself. I stumbled in this career. However they respond, it tells me my next move. If they go straight business, I know I got to nurture it one more time. Right? Because I'm like, okay, cool. You've been in business for 12 years. That's awesome. How did you get into that? Okay. Because I want the personal connection. I don't want to stay the intellectual side of things. If they came back and they tell me a cool story, I'm usually to the point, I'm like, man, this sounds like an amazing story. Are you open to a Zoom call? I'd love to hear it in person. And you'll be amazed at how quickly people are like, well, sure, I'll tell you my story. Now, at no point have you said anything about your business. No point have you said anything about what you do. You're just going to get the conversation. And then once that, then same thing with the other reach out. Once you say, hey, tell me how'd you get in that business? As soon as they tell you that story, your next move is, man, that's such an awesome story. I'd love to hear it in person. Are you okay getting a Zoom call? Right. And it's just the same transition. Once you get them on the Zoom call, now you pour into them and we'd start off and it'd be, hey, Sarah, you told me such an amazing story on LinkedIn. Walk me through it. I'd really love to hear it from your own words. Don't say shit about you. Don't say shit about your business. Dive into them and let them come to you, because what you're doing now is information gathering and a beautiful thing. This is why you got to actually give a shit about people, because as they tell you their story, they're going to tell you so many key things that makes you, allows you to make a lot of assumptions, you know, that you can pour into. And as they open up, you need to start taking your mental checklist of different things they're saying and go, okay, they said, you know, they just started this business 6 months ago. That tells you a whole lot. They probably don't have a whole lot of extra money to spend, you know, on anything. So this will probably be a meeting where I'm just going to introduce them to a whole bunch of other people. Or they say they've been in business for 10 years. They've got the most amazing office manager, you know, and they start, whatever the stories are, you've got to explore into them. Is that answer your question is how to get it all started?
Yeah, absolutely. And something you mentioned a little bit earlier is that value. So, and you kind of touched on it there a bit too, you're leaving them with a great amount of value, whether or not it's going to proceed from that point kind of through the pipeline. So what types of things might you give somebody that are valuable?
Introductions are always the most badass thing. So I'm always in every conversation thinking about, okay, who does this person need to meet? Who can I get them to? And you don't lead with that because you sound sleazy. You're like, if we just met on LinkedIn and I immediately said, oh, hey, Sarah, who's a good client for you? I love giving referrals. Who should I open the door to? It feels forced and sleazy, right? So, but if I go and I invest some time with you and we jump on a Zoom call, we connect, we really get to know each other. Now, what I'm going to start asking is very specific questions, especially if I decided you're not a fit for me. What I'm going to do is go, okay, Sarah, so walk me through it. What was your best client you ever had? And I'm going to get them to tell me that story, because in telling me that story, it allows my brain to start going, okay, who's like this? Who's just like this? Who can I introduce them to? And what you'll find is as they tell you that story and you're thinking, who do I know? Who do I know? Who do I know? You're going to find yourself going, got it. And you go, you know what? I'm going to introduce you to Lisa, because let me tell you why. And then you send the introductions. And, you know, usually if I sit with anybody, I'm going to make two or three introductions before that call's over. And I'm going to make them right then and there, so they know I'm not full of shit. And I'm going to like, look, on LinkedIn right now, if you'll check Messenger, I just sent you an introduction to Lisa. And my introductions are always funny as shit, because I'm like, Sarah, go meet Lisa, have a Zoom call. I don't say shit else, right? Because I don't want to fuck up their deal for them. Like, just go have a conversation. And so introductions are always amazing value. If you're a coach, a consultant, something like that, coach them gently, nurturing, give them free advice. It's 100% okay to pour in their into their world a little bit. If you run a marketing firm, tell them two or three things that they can do on their own for marketing. If you're, you know, a dentist or, you know, something else like that, then just connect with them. Tell them about a community events, you know, give them something and don't worry about the ask on the back end of what you need, you know, pour into them. And what you're going to find is I love the idea of creating champions, because the more you pour into people, the more people are celebrating you and your name. And so more people start showing up in your world and they're like, dude, I hear your fucking name everywhere. And I'm like, right. That's how you know when you're doing the shit the right way.
Nice. And what about in the case where once you've done this digging, you've poured into them, as you say, you kind of discover along the way that they would be a great fit for your services, for your product. How do you kind of turn the conversation?
Absolutely. So there's two options. Excuse me. So option number one, you flip the call right then and there. So you're diving in, you're like, dude, they have checked every box that I have. And it's really gentle. You go, Sarah, I got to be honest. I'm freaking stoked to be having this conversation right now. I'm freaking really enjoying this. Would it make sense if I tell you a little bit about more about my world and then we decide if there's something we should do together? Are you okay with that? Excuse me. And in doing that, what you'll be amazed is if the conversation's been on the right level, right connection, they'll be like, yeah, let's do that right now. And you move transition smooth into it. Excuse me. The other option is you go, Sarah, I can tell you we've spent almost 45 minutes having this amazing conversation. And I got to be honest, I think you and I could really partner up on some things. Are you open that, because I don't want to take another hour of your time. Are you okay if we schedule another meeting and we really sit down and dive into what my company does and how we can help your company move forward? Are you open to that idea? Both times you're asking specifically if they're open to the idea. And this is permission-based marketing or permission-based sales at its finest, because you're not saying, hey, let's do this. Let's have a meeting and get into, you immediately go greaseball. This is you standing on the back end of it and asking for that gentle move to go forward. And what you're going to find is most times, I mean, for me, within an hour conversation, I can go from, okay, I know exactly where they're at, I can do something with them, to a closed deal on the back end within that same 1 hour Zoom call. But this comes from lots of repetition, lots of conversations, right? So for a lot of people starting out, go for that second sales meeting. You know, and ask them specifically, hey, can we go have a real sales conversation? And when they say yes, set the appointment right then and there, mm-hmm. right? And get it in there. And then when you have that sales conversation, open it up gently. So Sarah, you know what? I so enjoyed our conversation last time. Amazing conversation. I know we're going to show you a little bit about our company and what we do. Seriously want you to know that if we get to the end of this thing and we're not a fit, it's 100% okay if you say, no, this is not what you're looking for. Are you okay with that? And they're going to say yes every fucking time, because nobody sits across from them and says it's okay to say no, right? And it just makes for such a, and you'll watch them, their body mannerisms, their everything will relax, because like, fuck, this isn't a normal sales call. Right. And that's how you know you're doing the right things, because you're going into it from the mindset of how can I pour into this person through the sales process?
Absolutely. We've talked a lot about LinkedIn and Zoom, or, you know, video mm-hmm. call as our top channels here. Are those your two kind of favorite channels for connecting? Do you use cold call or email at all?
Yeah.
For
Cold email so much. We have a warm list that we use, but surprisingly, I mean, DMs in general, direct messages is by far our number one tool. But to get to CEOs of companies, if that's who you're going after, Twitter's been the best platform for that. Which has been kind of fun, because I don't tweet a whole lot. And it's like, I got 1,000 followers on Twitter, but I have no idea where they came from. Twitter's been a great platform to get to CEOs, because a lot of CEOs are on the Twitter, and they're watching content, they're active. And so, you know, we picked up a lot of sponsors for our Badass Business Summit through Twitter. You know, because they're there, they're tweeting, we're interacting with their tweets, and it's me interacting with their tweets. And, you know, they see my name pop up a couple of times, and I'll slip into their DMs, and I'm like, hey, you know, freaking love your content, love what you do, keep it up. And when they come back to me, go, you know, hey, probably not anything you're interested in, but we have a summit coming up, and our audience is your exact clientele. Would it make sense for us to grab a call and I tell you a little bit more about what we're doing? And you tell me if it's something you guys are interested of. And by the way, no is okay. I'm still going to be into your content. And, you know, it's such a non-threatening move that a lot of them took us up on it, you know, because we were slipping into them. But we do cold calling. We don't do traditional cold calling. I don't like when people just sit at their desk and smile and, you know, and try and crank it out. We do team cold calling. So our entire philosophy is you go, I go. So nobody in my company is going to do a cold call where they're by themselves. They always have to be in a pair. And the more smart ass you get two people together, the better. Because the way we cold call is you're going to call somebody, have fun, but you're probably going to fuck up something. And when you do, your partner better make fun of you and go, dude, you totally bombed that. It was the worst cold call in the world. And the guy who screwed up better look at him and goes, yeah, you're calling next. And when he calls and bombs, you make fun of him. When something goes right, you high five, you celebrate, and you turn it into an experience. Because cold calling is supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to be this freaking grind, right? Yeah. And it's nerve wracking. But when you partner up with somebody, and shit, I don't care if a damn if you break a bottle of rum out and you're doing shots and having a good time, turn it into an activity so you're not just miserable with it. Because grinding it out by yourself, you're just going to stay up in your head and be absolutely miserable. So find somebody who's as silly and as crazy as you are and go make fun of each other and have fun and coach each other and things you could have said better. And you'll find cold calling can be actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. That's really great advice. It's something that I only have done with my SDRs as they're onboarding, because as you say, it's like this daunting, scary task. And it's so helpful to have them do this paired up calling, but honestly, it's a great strategy forever. It shouldn't end at the onboarding mark. Okay. Very interesting. So we've talked about, that's the kind of building the initial conversation. What about these other asks that the salespeople are having to make? So let's say this is one that kind of has to happen at the end of every single call throughout that pipeline, but the, like, are we going to move forward ask? How can you approach that?
So for me, it's a similar phrase, but it's, what do we do next? Because most times in my philosophy, if you do sales right, they're going to tell you, let's get started before you ever have to ask. If you get the entire process right and you've provided them with real value, they're going to look at you at some point and go, cool, how do we get started? Right. If you ever get to a point where you think you need some sort of closing strategy, you fucked up way up front. Right. So, and I mean, this is a lot about reading their mannerisms, reading their tonality, and understanding who you're sitting across from, because if they're into it, they're leaning into the conversation and they're with you and you know all the moves, you know what they're saying, you should know before you ever have to get to what's it, should we do next, if they're in or not. And if you ask that question, if you get to the point where you need to ask, what do we do next? And they're like, well, I don't know. Yeah, you fucked up way before then. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know. I mean, for me, I'm a one call close, and it's because I suck at following up. Right. So I've created it that, look, let's get to the end of this and decide if we should move forward or not. And no is okay. And, you know, if somebody looks at me and they're like, well, I need to think about that. Cool. It's a no, it's fine. You know, mm-hmm. We're still going to be friends. We're still going to be referral buddies, whatever else, but let's call it a no. That way I never come across as a creepy salesperson. And what you'll find is they'll laugh at that. And I'm like, well, truthfully, I suck at following up. So this keeps me from having to figure out how to send an email and all this other crap. So let's just call it a no for now. They're like, okay, cool. It's a no. I'm like, awesome. And you get closure. And closure is a beautiful thing in the sales process. But there are instances, you know, especially if you're like in a technology sale, you know, or maybe a social media sale, something that has a lot of moving parts, that there may need to be a secondary meeting. Like if you sell email marketing automation, right, there's going to be a lot of moving parts to that. So there's going to be a need to go back, assess, figure things out and go, okay, here's our game plan moving forward. In that, get permission to get that second meeting. And so they'll be like, hey, Sarah, so here's my understanding of where we're at now. You have these parts, you have these pieces, you have this kind of budget to work with. Are you okay if me and my team go back, we kind of put this game plan together, how this could work, and we come back with a couple of options? Would that be an okay situation to go through? And they'll find most times they're like, yeah, it'd be absolutely fine. And I'll tell them all the time, I'm like, look, even if you don't move forward with this, here, have the process. It's yours. You can tell the next company this is how you should move forward with it. And you'll be amazed. They're like, really? I'm like, yeah. I mean, you know, it's what you need to do, whether you spend the money with us or not. And it's that whole real thought process. So, you know, and then if they're like, yeah, let's do that. Cool. Get it on the books right then and there, because any next step that's not on the calendar as a designated, you both know your meeting, you know why you're meeting, you know what the expected outcome is supposed to be, then if it's not there, you have nothing. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I suck at follow-up. So it's a one call close.
makes sense. But in the case of these more complex deals, as you're saying, you just lay out that path from the beginning rather than finding yourself in a situation where you're having to ask for it. 100%. Because at that point it's too late. Yep. Kind of lay it out early in the process. Say like, this is how things usually go. Is it okay if we follow that path? Yes. Well, tell me no at any point. Let's go.
100%. 100%.
Cool. And you, same kind of rule, do you think applies all the way up to that closure moment, kind of through the entire sales process?
Yeah, I think you're constantly evaluating where you are. And you can feel it when somebody shifts. Like if you say something in the middle of the call and the person goes from being open and fun to a little bit more standoffish and cold, you said something stupid somewhere along the way. Pause, go, wow, I really fucked up somewhere, huh? And I will say it just like that because it usually gets them to laugh. Because in a lot of business, they don't hear somebody say the F word, right? I'm like, wow, I really fucked that up, didn't I? And they'll laugh. They're like, well, I don't want to say that. I'm like, all right, cool. What did I say? And they'll tell you. But most people are just going to, no, I'm just going to plow through that moment and keep
trying to recover,
forward.
Even though you don't know what you've done wrong.
You don't know what you're recovering for, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, this is why I say this is real conversations. Like if you're talking to your best friend and all of a sudden she goes quiet on you, you're not just going to keep plowing the fuck over the top. And you're like, dude, what happened?
What?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing here. You know, this is why sales has to be a real conversation, and you got to show up as yourself, because, you know, there's a lot of people when I was doing a lot of sales training for a bunch of young guys and gals, you know, they would ride along with me on sales calls, and on the way to the sales call, it'd be this fun conversation about their kids, their family, all this stuff. And then we'd get to the place of the sales call and the Jekyll and Hyde maneuver would happen and they'd become somebody completely else. And I'd always go along as a sales guy in training so they didn't know I was the trainer. And so we'd walk into this call and they would completely bomb these sales calls. And they're looking at me to try and bail them out. I'm like, look, I'm just a sales guy in training. Yeah, you know? if you're training salespeople, it's a great tactic to go in and see what they're doing in their world. And afterwards, I'd ask them, like, what happened? You know, you were such a relaxed, normal person, but as soon as you got in that call, you became somebody else. And the reason you got to stay yourself is because some point, your real self's going to show up anyways. And if you're not that same person that started the sales conversation, that's now working with them as a client, you will lose credibility and trust because now they've readily met the real you and they may not resonate with that person. Right. So you've got to be you all the way through. So you don't come across of, oh, that motherfucker got me. He was so genuine and nice and great. And now he's this asshole who's over the top or whatever else is, you know, that whole Jekyll and Hyde routine.
Interesting. And are there any examples of people that you see out there that are doing this well? If people are looking for some cool role models out there, other than yourself, of course, to kind of follow, are there people that you see out there in the space kind of being their authentic selves and then, you know, selling?
Well, I think the biggest one's got to be Gary Vee, whether you love him or hate him. I mean, that dude I saw do a live the other day on Instagram or something, and he was fucking shirtless. And you're like, look, Gary, you're not a bodybuilder or anything. You're like, you know, but you always get Gary. Crooked hat sometimes. And I'm like, dude, who dressed you today? You know, but you always get Gary. That's one thing I've always respected about the guy is no matter what, you're getting him. I think Jen Sincero does a great job of just showing up as herself and what she does. And I think a lot of the other names are a lot of your up-and-comers that are coming through. Like Laura DeFranco comes to mind. She got a ton of best-selling books. You'll have to go. She runs a company called Brave Healer. And when you meet Laura, you get Laura. No matter where she's at and what she's doing. I mean, so I think there's a lot of cool people in the space, but I think most of the people are your up and comers because this is a whole new philosophy to sales. This is a whole new way of thinking because there's a lot of us that are trying to combat the Grant Cardone, you know, Ryan Stueman style of sales that is just win at all cost, you know, and we're going to eventually beat them at their game. You know, because there's just a cool new generation coming out that actually gives a shit about people.
Yeah. And the buyers are younger too. It's not just the sellers, but like there are a dying breed that you could probably still convince with your strong arm challenger sale, sure. But it's they're a dying breed as well. So really interesting. It makes sense that this is sort of, this is the new frontier for sales. Is
absolutely.
almost just ignoring the fact that it is sales and being a real human being. It's very interesting.
That's it. And it's fun. And I love the fact you brought up Challenger sales, because I grew up a little bit on Challenger sale, and my personality, I could rock the Challenger sale, right? Give me that. Yeah. And I could go browbeat the shit out of somebody. But most people are gentle in nature. And if they try and do the Challenger sale, they're just going to lose. Because they're going to go up and they're challenge somebody, and somebody's like, what the hell are you talking about? And all of a sudden they're going to crumble.
That's a facade, it's a thin one. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I think that people have been looking for an authentic selling style for a long time. They've been trying to find a way to feel good about what they're doing. And I think, unfortunately, there's just been so much information over the years that brought the greaseball style to the forefront. And then you got, you know, what's that asshole that was Leonardo DiCaprio played in the movie?
Jordan Belfort.
Yeah, Belfort. You got that asshole out there who did prison time, and now he's still teaching his tactics.
Like, honestly, I was thinking of that early in the podcast when you were talking about this stuff. I was like, literally the tactics are the way that he would talk on the phone, and they'd all follow that same script where it was phony and smarmy and made the millions of dollars, but you couldn't feel good about it.
Right. But people are still he's got thousands upon thousands of followers right now, because there's a whole class of people that are after this, I don't know, lifestyle, fake lifestyle, whatever.
Yeah. The glamour.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to go sleep with yourself. And if you can't feel good about what the fuck you're doing, you're going to have a miserable fucking life. And I mean, you do you. I mean, people, but at the end of the day, I want to be able to kiss my wife goodnight and go, damn, this was a good fucking day.
Yeah.
You know, I promise the longer play, the better. Look at Richard Branson. One of the most genuine, cool guys in the marketplace. I mean, doing amazing things. And he's a good fucking dude. Got a weird voice for him. So, I mean, you're like, Richard, really? That's your voice? But but he's really a good dude. And he's one of the few guys that proves that being a good guy makes for a great leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. I think that's a perfect place to kind of wrap it up. But there's one more question I have that is just honestly purely my own curiosity, because like you, I like to hear about how people's kind of histories meet with their future, their current future, whatever, however you want to put it. But I'm interested to hear, how do you think your military past has impacted you in the sales world in terms of success? Because it feels to me like that is a little bit incongruent with the
100%.
Right? This kind of the bravado or whatever it is. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but there is that connotation with the military.
For sure. So it's interesting. I get asked about the military quite often. And here's the truth. I did 4 years in the Marine Corps. And I was not your picture perfect military personnel. I mean, I went in the Marine Corps with a chip on my shoulder. I didn't like authority. I still don't like authority. I don't like people telling me what to do. So for me, the Marine Corps was a great moment in time that forced me to grow up in a time I really needed to grow up. I think the Marine Corps probably instilled in me some great stupid things, like go beyond where most people would throw in the fucking towel and get it done anyways, which I think is the epitome of being a successful business owner. Anybody who's seen it be successful was too dumb to quit. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. And I think, you know, the get it done at any cost really came from the Marine Corps. I think I became who I am well many years beyond the Marine Corps. I think, you know, the idea of people are people, that came from, shit, I probably was a sleazeball sales guy for 10 years. You know, doing it the hardcore way. And I think, to give it kind of a fascinating story, when I was working for Cardinal Health and selling franchises for them, and a vice president of the company pulled me aside and he said two things that stuck with me for the next 10 years. And what he said was, Donnie, you got to lose the twang. When you say y'all in corporate America, you sound like a dumb hip. Nobody's going to take you serious. The second thing he told me, and he wasn't wrong, the second thing he told me is quit telling everybody you're a veteran. Nobody gives a shit. And what he wasn't telling me that he was disrespecting my service. He wasn't telling me to be ungrateful for serving. What he was telling me was quit leaning on it, quit using it as a crutch. Because oftentimes I'm like, I'm a Marine, you know, of course I should be climbing the corporate ladder. You know, I was using it as a tool to try and get ahead, when at the end of the day, I should have just kept my mouth shut and let my work fucking, you know, prove what I could do. And it took me 10 years before I ever told anybody I was a Marine after that moment. So I really hid it for a long time because it didn't bring me any value into corporate America. But now I use it mainly as a networking tool, because I can go anywhere in the world. And if there's another veteran in the room, I'll find him within the first few seconds, or find her in the first few seconds, because you can't get two veterans in a room without all of a sudden ball busting happening and vulgar comments and all kinds of craziness. It's a different camaraderie. So it was a great moment in time, but I think most of me was built, you know, in the years afterwards.
Cool. Very interesting. Well, thank you for indulging me in that particular question. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us on the Predictable Revenue Podcast. This is so interesting. We have some really nice tangible ways to not be sleazy at all these different points along the sales process. So thank you so much. If people want to learn more from you or about what you can help them do, where can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, for sure. If they'll send the word success to 817-318-6030, we'll send them a whole bunch of free stuff, free courses, free training and everything. And it'll give you all of our links and everything, how to get in touch with me, all of our social media and everything. It's the fastest way. So just send the word success to 817-318-6030 and we'll send you a whole bunch of free stuff. We love pouring into people. So it's the best way to get in touch with us. Can I do one fun thing for you though?
Yes, absolutely.
Guys, this was a fun conversation. Sarah's really good at this. She until she did her homework. Do me one favor. And if you guys got any value out of this episode at all, one tip, track, you know, tactic, anything you can use, do her the greatest favor and share this with one person, just one person, and tell them to listen to her show. I can tell you, being a podcaster myself, the greatest thing in the world is when somebody new subscribes your show and finds your content. So literally getting one person to listen, subscribe to her show is like you walked up and gave her a virtual hug. So share this with one person for her.
Thank you, Donnie. That's really great. Yeah, that would be so wonderful, you guys. Thanks again, Donnie. It was great having you. And thank you to all of you guys again for tuning in for another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. We'll catch you next time.